Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for joining us at the Wise Women Media Radio Show. We have got a great guest tonight, but I first wanted to go over a few announcements. You can see us online at wisewomenmedia.blogspot.com. Check out our website there. We're also on Facebook under the same name, Wise Women Media, and on Twitter. You can see a list of our sponsors, which are Daughters of Isis, Florida Nature Photos, Here Be Monsters on Blog Talk Radio, The Common Projects Network, Power New Media and Public Relations, Round Tree 7, Tarot and Stars, and the Hoodoo Blog. And keep in mind that independent media is independently funded by its listeners. We don't take any corporate contributions. So on the website, you'll see us there at GoFundMe, and hit us up at that link. No donation is too small to help out. So without further ado, I'll go over a little bit about what we're going to be talking about tonight. My guest isn't with us yet, but should be momentarily. We are going to be talking, as you probably know from the song you just heard, about the TPP. For people that don't know what that is, that is the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which is also called NAFTA on steroids. So I'm just going to kind of define it. It's a free trade agreement that would set rules on non-trade matters such as food safety, internet freedom, medicine costs, financial regulation, and the environment, a binding international governance system that would require the United States, Australia, Brunei, Canada, Chile, Japan, Malaysia, Mexico, New Zealand, Peru, Singapore, Vietnam, or any other country that signs on to conform to their domestic policies to its rules. A secret trade negotiation that has included so far over 600 official corporate trade advisors while hiding the text of these agreements from members of Congress, governors, state legislatures, the press, civil society, and the public. Very, very serious stuff here. And since most of these discussions are being conducted in secret, nobody knows exactly what the TPP is comprised of. We do know the Trans-Pacific Partnership will lead to job loss. The Trans-Pacific Partnership attacks U.S. environmental health laws, and it's been a total nightmare over the past 48 hours, for instance. I'm going to bring up what's happening in New Brunswick. Some anti-fracking protesters from the Mi'kmaq First Nation were attacked over trying to stop fracking on their lands. So the protest has now reached Montreal, and there's no chance of it not getting bigger under the First Nation organization called Idle No More. The Trans-Pacific Partnership will ban Buy American. The Trans-Pacific Partnership will benefit the banksters. So that much we do know about the TPP. I do believe I have my guest on. Kian?
Yes, hello.
Hi, Kian. How are you? Thank you for joining us.
I'm just wonderful. Thank you so much for having me.
Okay. And Kian, this is Kian Frederick. She's going to tell us a little bit about herself and how she got involved in basically working against the TPP. You have quite an impressive resume. So tell me, with everything that you've done, why this has become such an important issue.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much.
You're coming off kind of like it's not cutting out exactly, but it's not clear when you say some words. So I'm not sure if it's where you're standing or sitting, you might want to alter where you're standing or sitting and see if the phone reception might be a little bit better.
Let me try. I'm on a landline, so I am in a little New York City apartment, so that does happen sometimes. But is that any better?
That's a little bit better, yeah. Were you able to actually talk to any of the people that were involved in the Occupy Wall Street right there in New York? And is a lot of your organizing with a lot of those organizers? And are they actively involved in this movement as well?
The short, and tell me if it doesn't get any better because I've moved closer to the receiver thing. But the short answer to that is yes, yes, and yes, and yes. Yes, I was very involved with Occupy Wall Street in a supportive role. I certainly don't want to say, I mean, I didn't sleep down there. I'm too old for that. But the mother and me had to go down there and help them out and do all we could. I happened to be in the middle of another campaign at the time for the unemployed, for extending unemployment benefits, so those jive together. And from that, you know, we've made lasting and very positive relationships with a lot of folks. As you know, Occupy has kind of sprouted off into a million different places, but there's a great group of core organizers that are here that are working hard on different levels. I think a lot of it is issue organizing. So, for example, folks that are involved with the fracking movement, with the GMO safe food movement, with labor rights. And what I've been doing is trying to work with all of them, both within Occupy, within organized labor and traditional environmental groups, and to make them aware that, that what they're doing is great, but it could well be really have the rug pulled out from under you if you're working to get any kind of legislation passed or movement that, you know, would that this could just really, it could all be sort of for nothing. So, yes, the answer is we've been working with many different groups, but also to specifically answer your question, yes, with Occupy, because I know them from a couple years ago.
Now, one of the best sites that I've looked at with the most information is ExposeTheTPP.org. And I'm looking, as I'm looking at the site, I scroll down and there's probably probably about a good 30 to 40 pictures of people that have the issues, one single issue the TPP is affecting written on their hands. And I encourage people to go to the website, ExposeTheTPP.org, and then scroll down, and you'll be able to see the same thing I'm seeing. One has public health. Another one says stop corporate power grab. Another one says food safety, access to medicine, the environment, internet freedom, transparent policy, of course, food labels and food labeling, as we talked about and did direct actions for globally last weekend. With March Against Monsanto.
Right.
Yeah, fracking pollution that I mentioned at the top of the show.
Right.
And I'm watching the situation in New Brunswick very carefully, stop the job loss. So basically, being NAFTA on steroids, how do you think that this will affect just our general economy and jobs and being able to produce things in the United States?
Well, first, if I may, let me just thank you for the compliment on Expose the TPP, because that's the Public Citizen Global Trade Watch site. It's our activist site. So all of the information there is from Public Citizen, and we update it regularly. And the best way to get the latest information is to sign up for those emails. They don't kill you with emails, but then to get notifications of what is happening. And actually, it's interesting that you bring up the pictures. If you scroll down, you'll see somebody with two hands that says "Made in USA," I think, and that's me. So I'm there. But
cool.
But thank you. Yeah, I would direct folks to that site. It really enters. Actually, if you go up to the top of the site, click on that, you will see on the left-hand side of the next page links. And these are two really useful one-pagers that will tell you specifically about, you know, if you just want some information on what is this investor state thing they talk about, how could it affect jobs. And so those are just general one-pagers that are easy, and you can download those as well. Then if you continue on down, you'll see further reading, further information. So it has links to all of the, you know, back over to Public Citizen. So that's just a really great sort of portal for people who want to learn more. And there's also how to contact your congressperson, what to do, scripts to call, and all of that. So, but to answer your question, I mean, you know, in terms of jobs, first of all, it will affect in two ways. Certainly, there will be no improvement in terms of manufacturing jobs, and any improvement that we have, it will, you know, kind of stall it, because there'll be no improvement and, in fact, enhancement for those jobs that can be outsourced and sent overseas. And that's for two reasons. The first is that is the race to the bottom in terms of wages. But secondly, the TPP would enhance and add to the incentives that already exist for companies to move jobs and employment overseas. And we often think of the easiest thing is manufacturing, the garment industry, which we used to have a great garment industry in New York City. We don't anymore. But it's also anything that can be telecommunicated these days. Of course, my job, I don't care. I work in a hospital or I work someplace where but what happens is not only are we facing the overall race to the bottom in terms of wages and benefits, but there are less people to spend money on anything here because the wages are down and there are less people working. So it will not have a good effect on jobs at all. And those
I'm an
who
waitress too, and I'm
all
like,
right.
Yeah, I go out to eat, and I remember
right.
the days when I could walk out with $200 in my pocket,
and
you know, there was a constant, you know, there was people waiting for tables, and I was
right,
making tons.
No more.
And now, if we do go out to eat, you know, it's real slim pickings. There's not a lot of people out
That's
at all.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, and you can't make a living on $202 an hour. So, you know.
No, you cannot. And that's another thing. That you raise a very good example. You know, I mean, the tipped minimum wage is one thing that's outrageous, but just the regular minimum wage.
Right.
And this goes to investor state. You know, we think the majority of Americans think they could we should raise the minimum wage. Even if we get past the roadblocks politically in D.C., this investor state clause would the way that it would work is that I'm a global company and I come here and I get a contract to do whatever, be it with a municipality or the federal government, or I just open up a business here, right? I agree and I'm paying this minimum wage, and then it goes up. Because we in this country and our democratically elected people said, well, we want a living wage and not a minimum wage. I can then sue the United States of America at the World Trade Organization in court for imposing a trade sanction and imposing a trade sanction against me. The reason is that you have affected my future expected profits. That's the wording in the drafts that we've seen. And so what that means is that even if we pass legislation, we can still be sued. And think about that. First of all, if they win in these, and these are secret tribunals. I know I sound like a nutcase, but it's true. These are secret tribunals that happen, and the judges are corporate attorneys that rotate. So they'll sit and serve as a judge for three months. Then they rotate and go back and represent the corporations. I mean, it's unbelievable. And they sue, and if they win, which they usually do because it's already going on in NAFTA and to a lesser extent, when they win, they get taxpayers' money. So not only do they get our money, but think of the chilling effect this will have in any kind of legislation, which goes to the base of when we want to stop fracking, which we have, you know, in New York State, we want Cuomo to pass, you know, a ban on fracking. Japan just joined this thing, this TPP, and they are one of the largest importers of, I forget whatever the goop is you make out of fracking that you send off to places. You know, so they're the largest importer of that. So, I mean, this is deep stuff. But it's not as complicated as it sounds if you understand the investor state piece.
So what this means is when these judges and these lawyers are rotating out, they're able to have a conflict of interest, and they're able to do whatever they want to do with impunity, basically.
Absolutely. That's exactly what it means. And the way that we know this, what's in it, and let's just be clear, this is not a trade deal. A trade deal deals with tariffs and how many cars we're going to let in and that kind of stuff. This is a corporate rights thing. There's about 29 chapters that we know about, and we know about it from people that have leaked that information. That's why we know about it. We should make sure we talk about the secrecy factor. Only five of those deal with regular tariff issues. The rest deal with you know, all of these various corporate rights. And I know that I'm going on and on, but, I mean, it's amazing stuff. You know, but you're absolutely right. Yeah, and these are secret. It's in secret. Nobody knows about it. And talk about conflict of interest. You could not be more correct.
So one of the legislators, of course, that started talking about this was my old boss, because I worked for his 2008 campaign, Congressman, retired now, Dennis Kucinich.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wonderful guy, yeah.
He kind of sounded the alarm on this. I just saw one of his old videos from about a year ago, but of
mm-hmm.
course, you know, there couldn't be anybody more ethical. You know, he said
right
in the video, we're not allowed to look or even see these agreements. And he's speaking from, you know, at the time he was still a congressman, still
right
sitting in D.C. And, you know, the fact that he brought this to light, he was one of the few, I think maybe even the only, I don't know.
Probably then the only, yeah. Go ahead, I apologize.
But, you know, in my dealings with him, there could never be anybody more ethical than him. I never, ever saw him do or say a single thing that I would have considered unethical. And this is just something that he would never, never have agreed with if he was still in D.C.
Oh, no, of course not.
Fighting against
yeah
it.
Well, you know, time, history has proven him right. This began under the George W. Bush administration about 5 years ago, and they've been negotiating in secret. Over those years, good folks like Dennis Kucinich have been, you know, out there making the lonely call for people to pay attention. But after NAFTA and CAFTA, which got through with this fast track that we'll talk about, at terrible trade deals. I think that the corporations kind of learned a lesson and said, oh, hey, listen, we can get away with this stuff. So now they're coming up with this is the largest trade deal in the history of the world, and they're stocking it full with everything they can imagine. And just one thing on this investor state, currently under NAFTA and some of these other trade deals, if you're a corporation that wants to, you know, file a trade sanction against a company, you have to go to your home government and ask them. So if I'm a Japanese car company here and I want to file something against the U.S., I have to go to the Japanese government and say, hey, Japanese government.
You know, Alan Grayson is one of the few that's kind of picked up the standard. You know,
yes, he has.
From Dennis. And, you know, again, another moral, ethical person
right
that just, you know, I've never heard him say anything unethical or anything that I have not agreed with.
Yeah.
Joanne is in the chat, and she's got some really interesting comments. She said, most people I interact with think we should not raise the minimum wage because pimple-faced kids haven't earned it. They do not take into account that many fast food workers are not teens anymore. They are parents trying to make ends meet. That's a very interesting point. And she also says they also don't take into account that families whose parents make minimum wage get food stamps and other benefits paid for by taxpayers.
Exactly. Well, that's Walmart's claim to fame, right? I mean, when you go to work at Walmart, the first thing they do is sit you down and put you, you know, you can have your training on your job, but then part of their employee training is teaching you how to file for food stamps and Medicare. Or Medicaid.
Isn't that horrible? And she said
and
we
so
are in a...
She's right.
Yeah, subsidizing mega corporations who refuse to pay we the people a living wage.
And she's right about fast food workers as well, who are, I mean, I love their one-day strikes. The majority of them are the working poor. They have families. They're not kids, you know, doing a summer job. You know, there are people with families, people who have worked there 2 and 10 years, and they're making, you know, $7.75, $9 an hour. No, you can't live on this. This is just not, these are not sustainable wages.
She also said, Clinton sold us down the river with NAFTA, and I hate to admit that I bought that bill of goods not blinded this time. But one thing I do want to mention to Joanne and to anybody listening, NAFTA began with Papa Bush, with Bush Sr.
Right.
It was carried, so it was, the wheels were already set in motion for NAFTA to happen, and then Clinton became president, and he was the one that actually signed it. And it wasn't too long after he became president that NAFTA became law. So, you know, we need to go back into the history and look and see who actually set that in motion, and that was definitely Papa Bush. So I would say that, you know, I don't get into the whole game-playing thing between the Republicans and the Democrats because at this point I think they're both corrupt. Both parties are corrupt, joined and become one party, and it's the money party.
Right.
And
it's
I encourage everyone, all you have to do if you want to look up your representative, whoever that may be, you can go to opensecrets.org and see who funded their campaign and who they took money from, and that will tell you who owns them. And
it's a great website. Excellent website. I use it all the time. Yep, it's a great website.
But that's who you find out who bought your representative and who owns them and who they're going to do legislation to benefit. Because I don't too much legislation coming through that benefits us. So.
Well, that's for sure. Your caller or the person posting makes another good point or observation in terms of, well, when NAFTA came along, they said it was, not to put words in her mouth, but, you know, a lot of people did buy that bill of goods, in other words, because they tell you it's going to create jobs and create competition for our U.S. companies and all of that. And so they really do give it a gauzy-looking thing, and especially in tough economic times, people think, oh, good. So that's what they're going to do and are doing with the TPP. And so that's why I often say, people say, well, what's the TPP? And I say, what it is not is a trade deal. And that has to be very clear because there's only five chapters that talk about traditional trade issues. It's a corporate rights agreement is what it is. And just to give one example of how lopsided it is, in the issue of procurement, which is government contracts, everything from the federal government and the big defense companies that you think about down to a little municipal government that wants to, you know, fix the roof of its schools. That's all taxpayer money, government procurement. And so this would get rid of Buy America. So in other words, say you're that little school district and you want to fix your roof and you put out bids and follow the law and do what you're supposed to do. And, Joe's roofing company down the street puts in a bid, it's a little bit higher, and then the lowest one is some foreign global company. Well, under some laws, and I don't know if this is exactly, but just to make the example, there are Buy American provisions, which says, okay, it's not illegal for you to take the next bid up if what you're doing is promoting and keeping taxpayer dollars here, local, and at home. That would get rid of all of that. And if I put in a lower bid as a global corporation, I could sue you, little school district, for discriminating against me because your federal government gave away your rights, gave away the rights of little Joe's small business over there trying to build in its little town. I mean, it's outrageous. So it gets rid of all of those Buy America things. The procurement, the money that's available in terms of government money for U.S. corporations overseas, with all of these other companies combined, including Japan that just joined, the dollars available in procurement combined do not come anywhere near the dollars that the U.S. spends. So there is no equal trade here. There is no let's open up all these markets and it's going to grow and no. Other companies are going to come in and take our taxpayer dollars and take our jobs and drive our wages down and kill our small businesses, and there is no trade-off of a bunch of other procurement pot of gold money sitting anyplace else because they don't have the dollars, they don't have the economies that can support that.
So I just wanted to remind our listeners that we're listening to Keon Frederick. She's talking to us about the TPP. If you want to see her organization's website, it's www.expose the TPP. Just like I said, it exposed the TPP, one word, .org. And it is a really incredible website. It gives you a lot of information. You can sign up for regular emails. It tells you how to take action, direct action, and, of course, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Pinterest links, et cetera. So there's a lot of information there, a lot of reading. And it's something that's not light reading, I'm going to tell you, because it'll take a long time to go through it. I wanted to also mention to you and mention to our listeners that I happened to go to, in my searches today to get more information, the Office of the United States Trade Representative, Executive Office of the President.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a press release that was issued yesterday. I don't know if you've seen it yet, Keon. It's a Trans-Pacific Partnership Leaders Statement. Have you seen that?
I have not, not yet, no.
Okay, I'm just going to run through it real quick. We,
okay.
The leaders of Australia, Brunei, Darussalam, Canada, Chile, Japan, Malaysia, Mexico, New Zealand, Peru, Singapore, United States, and Vietnam, are pleased to announce today that our countries are on track to complete the Trans-Pacific Partnership negotiations. Ministers and negotiators have made significant progress in recent months on all the legal texts and annexes on access to our respective goods, services, investment, financial services, government procurement, and temporary entry markets. We have agreed that negotiators should now proceed to resolve all outstanding issues with the objective of completing this year a comprehensive and balanced regional agreement that achieves the goals we established in Honolulu in 2011, ensures the benefits of the agreement are fully shared, and takes into account the diversity of our levels of development. There's more. There's about
right.
three paragraphs after that. But if
yeah.
you all
I know
go
what this
to
is.
USTR.gov, that's USTR.gov, I think it's on the front page, actually. I saw it on the front page, but you go to the October press releases, and it's right there. Yeah, it's right on the front. There's a logo on the very front. If you go to ustr.gov, it says Trade Agreement, Trans-Pacific Partnership, and you can click into that, and you can get all the press releases when you get to that second page. Including the one that was released yesterday that I just read from. So the information is out there, but it's just so sketchy. It's like you really have to,
well,
take, you know, to find out what they're doing.
Well, it's that way. It's that way on purpose. Now, what this is, and I haven't read this specifically, but what's been in the works most recently, and one of the reasons that President Obama wanted to go to Brunei but couldn't because of the shutdown, was because he wanted to kind of glad hand and do all of this stuff and kind of get them all to sign on to what this is. They don't say it, or they may say it in the other paragraphs, but basically what they're saying is, okay, we're going to stop meeting. We think that we've done enough now, so we're going to stop meeting in our already secret meetings, and we're just going to let the representatives and the, you know, sort of the lower level people, which is the U.S. Trade Representative and others, you know, kind of go off and finish off this thing. And do it in secret. So they're all agreeing to do it in secret. So that's something that they all wanted to get all of these governments to say, it's okay that we all agree they go and finish it off in secret so that they could have, so that our government could have an excuse to say to these representatives and everybody else, well, no, we don't have to, here's some draft language, but see, all these, we agreed with all these other governments not to tell anybody anything about what's happening, so we're not going to tell you anything else. So they've been really pushing to get this agreement to go sort of secret in the end run, if you will, it doesn't make any sense to us because it's already been secret. The problem has been in our country, the U.S. Constitution, specifically Article 1, Section 8, which the founders of our country said specifically that Congress shall regulate trade with foreign nations. It says it right there. And what that's been the whole dispute about why haven't you been sharing this information with us and what. So now the president and his representative, the U.S. trade representative, has an excuse to say, well, see, we don't really have to tell you anything else, which kind of brings us to the fast-track discussion, but I'll leave it to you if you want to go there yet.
Yeah, I wanted to just kind of like go through some of the questions and comments in the chat.
Yes, okay.
You might want to address, because I'm sure some of these things I'm not going to be able to answer, because I'm a neophyte when it comes to the TPP.
I'm not, you know, I mean, I'm more of an organizer, but once you get into this, it really is, it's really incredible, and you really do want to learn more because it's shocking and quite amazing what can happen when we sort of, you know, aren't hypervigilant, and it's almost offensive that as just a regular person, we all have to live like this, you know, to watch our government and you know, which citizenship, we should have to be aware, and we should have to be educated. I'm certainly not suggesting otherwise, but, you know, but this is fascinating stuff, especially, in, you know, if you're someone who cares about your country.
Right. Now, the comment that I have here, my understanding is that the TPP will cause government regulations to bow to the lowest common denominator regarding regulation on food safety and other check and balance regulations. So if we import food from China, we have to reduce our safety regulations to the lowest safety measures enacted by those who sign on to the TPP.
Basically, yes. In short answer is yes. Just to be clear, China's not joined yet. It might. It's, you know, hasn't decided. But for example, there's been a lot of discussion about shrimp from Vietnam, and the problem is, I mean, it's not as simple as that. But in a word, yes. I mean, the problem is, so for example, Vietnam has very low, they don't have the same safeguards, and many other countries don't, in terms of their seafood. So when their seafood comes to be imported, we are agreeing not to apply our laws to that shrimp when it comes into our markets.
Yeah, and I'm going to tell you
right now,
right?
And if we do
that,
it's a trade sanction and we can be sued.
Yeah, right here and right now. At the site, the closest to, you know, of course, the BP oil disaster,
right,
where shrimp and fish have been tested by the FDA by smelling, and independent tests, it's ridiculous, it's ludicrous.
Right.
And independent tests, independent citizens have done independent testing on seafood. It's, you know, come back contaminated, including our shrimp. If people down here go to Red Lobster and want to get shrimp, that's the first thing they're told. Oh, our shrimp doesn't come from the Gulf of Mexico. It comes from Vietnam. Now, we don't know whether it comes from Vietnam or not, but all I know is people that I know that went right to the dock to get the shrimp and took it right to the test.
Right.
And had it independently tested, not like the FDA does by smelling, but actually lab tested. One test in particular came back at 193 parts per million. That's enough to change your DNA in regards to the crude, and the dispersant corrects it. So, you know, we don't have the safeguards either anymore. We used to, but
no.
We don't now.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, believe it or not, it's even worse in other countries, and Vietnam is no prize. To say they come from Vietnam, I you know, that's not a good thing. Either.
Well, that's what Red Lobster's saying to people down here when they.
But I wouldn't eat Red Lobster anyway. But you know.
We've got the tourists coming down. Of course, you know what
sure,
are the tourists?
Sure.
That's an $85 billion industry here in Florida, and they're coming down. And when they go out to eat, they want to eat shrimp. You know.
Of course. No, I lived in Miami for years and went back and forth so I'm a confirmed snowbird, you know. I mean, that's the life I want. I can't really afford it, but I tried to get away with it through different various campaigns and jobs, and I was successful for a couple of years. So I know the snowbird thing well. And we want to eat shrimp, yeah.
Now we've got the stone crab season, which, of course, comes into season in the winter.
Yep.
And this Joanne is also mentioning that there aren't many to harvest. They're probably dying off, and the price is high, and the quality is questionable. And now we've got people here dying when they go into the water from the Vibrio, which they're getting from either the water or seafood they're eating. The oyster population in Apalachicola, Florida, has collapsed.
Mm.
So we have some pretty crappy safeguards too, but NAFTA ruined some of it, and now we've got the TPP. So this is huge.
Let me ask
specifically, since this is a big concern for a lot of people, and we are very much here in Florida, a healthcare state because we have so many seniors. What will this do in regards to medicine? I think people really very concerned about that.
Excellent question. Excellent. And, we call it access to meds in our lingo in terms of the various different there's a couple of different chapters in this thing that I've mentioned that deal with exceptions to whatever rules that might happen in this and that. And these are not good exceptions. They're bad exceptions because what they're really doing is they're saying, on top of this whole investor state thing, we want it written out that this and this and that is true so that we don't have to even go through that whole sue thing. You know, it's just right there and it's obvious. And one of those things is Big Pharma, which has a chapter that talks specifically about extension of patents and importation of drugs. So in other words, when you go to the drugstore and you got your prescription and the doctor writes generic on it, and if there's a generic, you get it, and, you know, if you're lucky enough to have insurance, your copay is, you know, much cheaper, right? And obviously if you don't have insurance, it's a problem, you know, but it's still, you know, less expensive. Under this, they would be able to extend their patents. There are laws, obviously, in this country and other countries, but specifically in the U.S., about how long a company can keep a patent on a certain drug, and then it expires, and then it goes generic, and that's why we have generic drugs. And they're allowed to keep that patent in order to get back, you know, reimbursed for their money for research and development and, you know, whatever else. So there's always this ongoing thing of how long they get to keep patents. Obviously, the longer the better for them. So this would kind of take that system and blow it up in favor of Big Pharma and extend patents out, give them the right to extend it out, give them all this kind of sleazy, sneaky leeway to do things, and it is a situation of great concern for anybody that takes medicine, and particularly for senior citizens who live on anybody who lives on a fixed income. For all of us, we all sort of live on fixed incomes, but in particular for senior citizens, it would also affect medical devices and all these kinds of things. But it is most dramatically, we would see the biggest effect on less and less access to generic drugs.
Oh, God. And that's
huge.
The lifeline for so many of our senior citizens
here,
or people that are poor that just can't afford, you know, the top-of-the-line medications, or they're getting them.
People with diabetes, or anybody with any kind of condition, or, you know, certainly, I mean, the biggest thing has been with people, you know, HIV positive people who have to take a bunch of drugs, but anybody, you know, it's huge.
Yeah, that's a big thing. And I feel that we haven't even thought about the tip of the iceberg and how that's going to affect the medical community and just those of us that work in the medical community with the seniors.
Yeah.
What about I've been reading more about internet freedom. How will this restrict, like, just regular Joe Blow on the street that has an internet connection in his apartment and on his phone and, you know, maybe on his wireless device like a Kindle or whatever? How will these agreements affect affect our access?
Well, if anybody remembers SOPA, right, this is, again, SOPA on steroids. What it would do, and it's a little bit complicated, but in short, if you have ever, it has to do with copyright and intellectual property. So if you are making a flyer or you want to download a picture of something, a tree, or you're making a flyer and you want to, you know, you go get clip art or something, or if you ever, you know, kids should know about this, right? I mean, if you ever downloaded a song or something, it would, the way it would deal with, it would in effect use the internet to enforce copyright laws that don't really exist. So obviously, you know, if you want to download somebody's latest album, you're supposed to pay for it, and then, you know, there are places to get it where you don't. And so that's not what we're talking about here. We're not talking about getting something that you should be paying for and figuring out a free way to do it. We're not talking about that. We're talking about sharing of academic information, you know, and it would allow companies, it would allow, it would change the copyright laws in a way that would be very dangerous for people using the internet, and it would impose fines and this and that. But the most dangerous part of it is that the enforcement mechanism would be your ISP, your internet service provider. So under the law, they would have to enforce all of this. So what it would do is it would really make your internet service provider, you know, a cop that would check on absolutely everything that you ever downloaded. So if you wanted to go and download something, I wrote a thesis, you know, when I did my master's and my, you know, my university has it, you can go and somebody can download it and all that. Well, it would complicate all of that in a way that would make your internet service provider check on everything that you're downloading, in effect. And that's really the danger. Whether or not you have the freedom to get what you get or you don't, they would be able to really, you think the NSA is bad, this would be, as a matter of law, they have to look over your shoulder and check on absolutely every little thing that you're downloading, and if they don't, they can get sued.
Now,
so there's a big incentive for them to do that.
Right. The other day, I was actually speaking to a friend on, you know, Messenger on Facebook, and I typed the F word, and
right.
I was mad about something and typed it in the middle of our chat. And it was just a conversation. I wasn't mad at the person I was chatting with. And Facebook blocked us.
Mm-hmm.
Off the chat. So
right.
It ended up that I went over to Google to email her. My
right.
email was blocked.
Wow.
And it was only blocked to her.
Yeah,
and I thought, this is bizarre. And then I picked up the
stuff.
Phone, and I ended up calling her. But
right.
I thought, how could I go from Facebook? And I'm telling you, this Facebook account was not associated with that email that I used. But it was, of course, on the same computer and the same browser.
Right.
And I just thought, this is just completely bizarre that somebody would shut me off for saying the F word. And
yeah.
So now I kind of limit, you know, my expletives, and I found different ways to spell them so I can, you know, if I have to
yeah.
emphasize something, and I use the F word quite a bit to emphasize things. So I just
well, it's a
spell
pretty
it.
Creepy, yeah. It's a pretty creepy thing, right? You know, I mean, I just want to point out that actually, the people we have a one pager on this at the Expose the TPP.org site. Again, if you go to the site and then up on top, you'll see what's a TPP, how the TPP impacts you. Click on that, and then over on the left, you'll see these links that says Internet Freedom. But if you want to get the really good stuff, the deeper understanding about this, go to the Electronics Frontier Foundation site, and there's a link to that on our site as well. If you go all the way down on the left, and
right.
I'm just trying to pull up the site to let folks know, but they're really, you know, we defer to them on this, right? I mean, but they're able to give you the really, you know, the good stuff about, you know, more information about this
and the actual laws that probably exist currently. Now, I wanted to ask you, you know, we've been talking about all these different issues, and again, as Kian said, go to exposethetpp.org, click on how this impacts you. You'll open up a second page, and all these links are on the left-hand side: corporate power attacks, offshoring U.S. jobs, safety of our food, buy America, buy local, public health, yada, yada. It goes right down the list, and you can click on those, and it opens up another page, and you can download them, you can print them off, you can copy, paste, whatever you need to do.
Yeah.
But we've talked about most of all of these on this list in our conversation, but you've mentioned a couple times that China has not signed on yet. What is the emphasis, or what can we expect if China does sign on to this agreement?
I don't know that it will. I mean, I'm no expert. The simple answer is I don't know. And if it does happen, they would have to sign on. Any company, once it's so far along that any country signing on has to agree to whatever is already there. They can't renegotiate things, and which is another odd thing about this TPP, because usually an agreement's an agreement. They close it up, ba-ba-da-bing, all of the countries that are there are there. With this one, they're leaving it open. It's called a docking agreement, so that eventually every country on the face of the earth could join this thing, which is pretty frightful when you think about it. So, I apologize, but, you know, there's so many different – China has a huge economy like we do. So it would change the picture of things, but I don't think too much in terms of, because they don't have the same standard of living as we do. So we would still have sort of the same race to the bottom, many of the same health issues. They just don't have the same civil society that we do. So it would be, so not much would change in some regards. I think it would change certainly a lot of the incentives for large corporations, because they would then have access to the Chinese economy. I don't know if that's going to happen. China's kind of fallen out of favor in terms of a low-wage company. Vietnam is the favored nation now, because they really have such a repressive government, and there's basically no civil society there, and they can pay people practically nothing. So if they do, then I don't know the direct answer to that. Is the short thing to say.
I had two questions before we close the show. See how quick this hour went? It went so fast.
I know, but can we talk about Fast Track before we go?
Yes, that's what I was going to bring up, but I had question before that one. So see, great minds think alike. I had that question saved. People get the impression when they see things like this, like NAFTA and all these other corporate agreements and trade deals, they automatically think about the stuff that kind of inundated us back in the middle 90s when all the talk was about sweatshops and stuff. Will that kind of thing increase in regards to signing this, agreeing to it, and all these other countries producing these goods for cheap? Will we expect that there will be more sweatshops and more unfair working conditions?
Oh,
to
yes. Oh, absolutely.
And demand?
Without question. Yep. Because it increases the incentive for companies to go overseas for cheaper labor. And to these repressive governments where they have, you know, really no, they don't have unions, they don't have freedom of speech, they just don't have a civil society as we understand it. So, yes, without question. And the point being to bring the sweatshops back here, right, if they could get away with it. Already we see it happening in terms of inequality. There's a lot of things, the inequality we have now in our country, there's a lot of things, but, you know, the last thing we need is more of a depression on wages, a downward pressure on wages is the last thing that we need in this country.
Now, we go on to this term, fast track, and on your website it says take action. Derail fast track, stop the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Can you define for the listeners what fast track is and what each one of them can do now
Stop
the TPP?
Oh. Okay, so after all of this bad news, the good news is that we can stop this, and it's really not that difficult, but it does take everybody to kind of switch gears for a second and get into a little bit of a wonky thing about a procedural thing in Congress and then take some action by calling your congressperson and telling your friends. So as I said earlier, the Constitution says that Congress is supposed to regulate trade with foreign nations. In the 1970s, Richard Nixon, Tricky Dick of all people, came up with a system to kind of skirt that, and he called it fast track. And what it does is he convinced Congress, he basically said, look, this global stuff, all these trade agreements are getting a little too complicated and too weird here, and you guys are busy, and you don't really care about all this global trade stuff anyway, so why don't we do this? Why don't you give me complete authority to go and make a complete deal, and then I'll come back and I'll give it to you. You still get to vote on it, but you're only going to vote yes or no. You can't change it. You can't examine anything. So you vote yes or no on the whole deal, and that's it. And I want you to do that for me now before I finish the trade deal, because that way the people that I'm negotiating with over there will know that we can slip in any great thing we want to, and it's definitely going to get through Congress, because we know when we come back here, we're all going to talk about how it's a great jobs thing, and all you bozos are going to vote yes for it. So Congress said, yeah, okay, we'll give you fast-track authority, Mr. President. And so Nixon had that, and it went through a couple of iterations, and then George Bush, the first Bush had it, and then Clinton had it, and it expired, and then got back again, and back and forth. But the latest granting of fast-track authority, or as they call it now, trade promotion authority, expired in 2007 and has not been renewed since. So now, with TPP coming to a close, they are the president is asking Congress to again give him this fast track authority, and to do it now, right away, before the whole trade agreement is done. That's why the memo that you read earlier is so interesting, because they got all these other countries to agree, okay, we can't tell anybody anything, because they want to bring the vote to fast track. They want to get Congress to vote yes on fast track before they see the whole thing, obviously. And basically it's a trust me, but don't worry, you get to vote no. So, but we know that that's not going to happen. The majority of trade deals that we have passed in this country have been passed the good old-fashioned way, the way that the founders intended. Only 16 in our history have been passed using fast-track authority, and those are the bad ones, the NAFTAs, the CAFTAs, the ones we hate. So fast-track is only used for bad trade agreements, ones that they want to slide through. So that vote is coming up. We don't know when because we're not in control of it, but the best way to find out is to sign up at exposeittopp.org because they'll send you an email. But don't wait because we don't know if it's coming up in the next couple of weeks or, you know, by the end of the year. But you want to be sure that your member of Congress, not your Senate, we don't care what happens in the Senate. We want to stop it in the House. Your member of Congress knows that you expect them to vote no on fast track. And I want to be very clear, please, do not call them up and tell them to vote no on the TPP. There is no vote coming up on the TPP anytime soon. You want them to vote no on fast promotion authority. And if you say that to them, they will know exactly what you're talking about. The TPP is the first one, but there's got right behind it is another one coming with Europe and everything else. So we want to stop fast track. And if they don't get fast track authority, then it has to go through the regular process, which means it will go through all of the committees and all of this stuff will be exposed and the American people will never let it happen. So that's how we beat it, is by beating fast track.
I think we should just keep Twitter bombing until people finally get it.
Absolutely.
Twitter bombs. And Twitter bombs have been known to be really, really effective. You just get on Twitter and you get everybody else on Twitter and just do it. And every single representative that has a Twitter account, just hit up every
single. Keep it up and keep doing it until this vote happens, whether it happens in 2 weeks or 2 months. And make sure, though, that it's about fast track and not about the TPP, because if you're talking about voting against the TPP, it's going into the thin air, and your member of Congress can say, oh, well, I haven't decided yet, and this and that. They're not going to say to you, oh, do you mean fast track? You need to know what you're talking about, and we're talking about fast track.
Okay, well, that certainly defines it, and I'm glad we saved that that little bit for last, but because that could confuse people. It's like getting, you know, like getting all these add-ons on, you know, stuff that you're voting on your ballot, and you don't know what the heck you're voting on, actually, because of the language. So you've made it very clear that fast track, we need to say no to fast track.
That's right. And it's a mouthful. Look, all of this is so much, it's a mouthful, and I have great respect for you and for your wonderful listeners for sitting through all of this wonky stuff with me. I mean, God bless you. Because it's a lot to wade through.
Oh, yeah, and like I said, you know, it's not going to be easy, but I'm going to go to the website, exposethetpp.org, and I am going to sign up tonight, but I am also going to read every single word that's on that site because I want to know if this comes up again. You know, I'm locally elected here with the Hillsborough County Soil and Water Board, but I talk to people, you know, all over the place, that are locally elected, and I want to make sure that if I'm bringing this up again, I know what I'm talking about because it is very complicated, and it's not easy to it's not easy to process that our own government could do this to us. It's almost
right.
You know, it's almost like I've heard this said by several people, and I'm gonna repeat what they said. This is the final nail in the coffin for America.
That's right.
If this passes, it will be the final nail in the coffin. Our America will no longer be America. And that really freaked me out when I heard that. I said, wow, that is – so it is. It's very difficult for me to process.
And, you know, and I know we're up against time, but I just want to give you one easy way to boil it down, though, is that – just remember the investor state clause, right, which affects everybody. And then if you know somebody's involved in one, you know, cares about one of these specific issues, give them an example based on that and don't worry about all the other stuff. And then explained, and then the way to get to explain it also, and with your rep, with the TPP and Fast Track, is to say, look, even if you don't get all of this right and everything, it's been done in secret. So what's wrong with finding out what's in there? What's wrong with figuring out and having everybody see it? And all you're asking your member of Congress to do is to choose the founding fathers, choose their system over Tricky Dick's system. It's really pretty simple. And all you're not asking them to vote against the TPP, to take an issue on anything. You just want them to do their job as the founding fathers said they should and wrote and has worked for 200 years. That's all we're asking folks to do. So whether we agree or don't agree on this or that about trade and TPP and all this stuff, I mean, we have to know about it so that we can get people's attention. But Fast Track, we're just asking Congress to do their job like they're supposed to, and what's the problem if it's all just going to be fine with exposing the whole thing and having everybody look at it anyway? What's the problem with that?
Yeah, they are just too afraid for the
Sure, they don't want anybody to see it. We know.
Yeah. But I want to thank you so much for being on the show tonight.
Well, certainly my pleasure. Thank you.
Oh, and for breaking all this down for everybody, I want to let everybody know that, you know, this archive is available forever. You can go right to wisewomenmedia.blogspot.com and click on the link whenever you want to listen to the show again, or if you want to forward the link on to somebody else that might want to listen to the show that might be interested in this topic. But I think everybody that's American should be listening to this so they know what's being done in their name by their representatives. So, and we need to coordinate some kind of Twitter bomb or online thing so everybody is contacting their representative and stating emphatically no to Fast Track. This needs to be done right away. So, so Keon, thank you so much for being with us. And check
My
us
pleasure.
Out on wisewomenmedia.blogspot.com. Don't forget to hit us up on the GoFundMe link. We'll have another show ready for you next week, Friday at 10 o'clock. And Keon, anytime you want to come back, if you get any updated information, just give me a holler and we'll get you back on this show.
So. Well, I will. Thank you so much, Anita. I really appreciate it. And quickly, I'm going to send you a link for the internet site and also a good site if people are interested in the GMO issue, so an activist group there. So I'll send
and
that
what
to you.
I'll do is on the blog post for the promo for this show at wisewomenmedia.blogspot.com, I will post those links there as a comment so people can go in and grab those links and look at them.
Great.
But thanks to all the listeners and to everybody. I'm going to close the show. We'll do a little listening to Congressman Dennis Kucinich about a year ago talking about the TPP. And I'll say goodnight to everyone now. So have a great weekend. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Kucinich. The negotiations over the Multinational Transnational Partnership, or TPP Free Trade Agreement, lack transparency. The U.S. Trade Representative denies members of Congress and the public access to the classified text of the agreement. This policy of secrecy undermines public trust and denies members of Congress the opportunity Congress has historically been afforded to provide input on trade deals. According to Public Citizen's Global Trade Watch, the U.S. Trade Representative has consulted with over 600, mostly corporate advisors, on the context of the classified TPP text, while continuing to deny access to policymakers whose constituencies will be greatly affected by the Trans-Pacific Partnership. From what has been leaked of the TPP, it is shaping up to be worse than NAFTA, if you can believe that. The North American Free Trade Agreement's legacy of deregulation, the outsourcing of American jobs, and the undermining of environmental and health laws is legendary. The devastating track record of free trade agreements thus far is clear, and recent reports confirm the fears of those of us who opposed the NAFTA-style free trade agreements with Korea, Colombia, and Panama last year. Colombia continues to be the most dangerous place in the world for trade unionists. Our trade deficit with Korea in the auto sector has grown to nearly $8 billion, a 28% increase over the same period from last year. In June of this year, I joined over 100 members of Congress in asking the U.S. Trade Representative for more transparent negotiations and to provide Congress with the vital opportunity to get input on the agreement. Our voices join thousands of people across the country in a broad range of civil society groups, such as the Electronic Frontier Foundation and the American Medical Student Association and the AFL-CIO, all calling for increased transparency and accountability in the TPP negotiation process. When will the U.S. Trade Representative listen? Why is the process so secret? Shouldn't we know the details of the Trans-Pacific Partnership before the election?